welcome back into another edition of Play-by-Play Cast. It is the podcast about play-by-play broadcasters for play-by-play broadcasters and hosted by a play-by-play broadcaster, a professional development podcast that dives into the tips, tricks, experience, stories, process, and preparations of some of the biggest and best play-by-play names in the business. Sloan Martin joins us today, mainly from Big Ten Network, but we'll get into a host of her other vocations as well. Sloan, I appreciate you for taking the time.
No, thanks for the invite. I mean, these are super helpful and often don't kind of get to dive into this stuff.
Oh, thank you for, thanks for being a, I don't want to say a guinea pig for it, but thank you for participating. I want to start with you. Obviously, you make your full-time living in play-by-play now, but I actually listened to an interview where you had talked about the dream at some point in the future being making your full-time living off of play-by-play. So take me on your journey a little bit in terms of how you got to doing what you ultimately wanted to do and kind of the offshoots that helped you get there, if that makes sense. I know it's kind of a broad topic, but like, what are the things that, hey, let me do this because it's going to set me up to get to where I ultimately want to be?
Yeah, it's an interesting question because I feel like everyone's journeys are going to be different. So there are some people who find those jobs right out of college, right out of the gate. And I was not one of those people. It was really only 2021 where I was able to finally take off and do this full time financially. But I spent 10 years full time in news. And this is hard news. And that includes 5 years here in Minneapolis where I lived, where we covered, you know, really hard things, including the murder of George Floyd, the unrest that followed, the trial of Officer Derek Chauvin as well. A lot of things that I was, you know, out on the street till 3-4 in the morning, whether it's going to the state capitol, covering different kinds of events, just anything you can imagine, I have done it in news. And a lot of times it was difficult. Of course, I would rather be doing sports. I was using every paid time off I could muster. I would mathematically work it out for travel days, for game days. There were times where I would leave, you know, have a flight go out at 7 o'clock, have a game day the next day, fly back at 6 the day following to be at work at 9 a.m. So that was a long time of doing that. But I'm so appreciative because it kept me broadcasting and it helped me develop a voice and it helped me to be comfortable in any kind of setting, no matter how difficult, complicated, sensitive a topic is, no matter who I'm working with. I feel like I can relate to so many people because I've spoken to, you know, probably hundreds of strangers to hear their perspective, people who have different experiences than I do. And it took me a while to learn that all of that added up to making me a better sports broadcaster as opposed to just sitting down and getting the reps. And I was getting the reps. And I was someone who worked at a very small station in between Buffalo and Rochester, New York. That was kind of my first on-air job. I was a one-person band. And there's people along the way, including that program director who allowed me to do play-by-play on the side. I have a great picture where the local newspaper did a story about me. And I have like a student's desk shoved into a corner of a gym, and there's a sign that says free yearbooks, and there's just me with my headset on, as enthusiastic as can be. So I think about all those times where it was just high school sports. It was
did anybody ask for a free yearbook? But like, did you get the person that comes up to you and is like, are you the one with the free yearbooks?
Luckily not. No, luckily I probably looked more official than that, or hopefully not like a student at that time. But it really was getting, you know, those reps early on, then moving to the college level. But really the thing that has kind of tied my career at this point really was being a broadcaster in the first place, and it all carried over.
Did you like news? Like, or I guess tell me about going into that to start with and saying, you know what, this will get me on the air, this will develop me in other areas, and I'm going to go crush it for everything that it is.
Yeah, that's how I had to train myself to think, because it was hard to say, I'm not getting that job that I want right out of the gates, first as a young person and also, you know, as a woman, where I really had to say, no, this is my position. I didn't want to be pigeonholed. I wanted to be someone who was authoritative and trustworthy. And there's so many parallels between doing play-by-play, seeing something, relaying it to other people, choosing what is the most newsworthy information to parlay to other people, the same thing you do when you're reporting live on the street, doing a live hit. And, you know, so much of your work, especially in radio, which is where, you know, the bulk of my background comes from, I'm doing stuff, you know, on the street corner, wherever I can find some shelter from a Minnesota winter and have my fingers move so they don't get too cold while I'm typing up a script. All those things are really, really correlated. So when I was going through, I had to remind myself of what that goal is, because it was hard at times. There was really, you know, a lot of demands because I cared about doing it right and getting it right and serving our listeners. So even if I had to learn about state politics here in Minnesota, had to learn what a biennium report is, which is basically a state budget, but here they do it on like a 2-year schedule as opposed to 1-to-1. Kind of learning the ins and outs of so many different things. I didn't understand healthcare. I didn't understand the tax system, but when you're covering state and local government, you have to throw yourself into these things. Same thing as if I'm, you know, doing a sport I'm not familiar with, which has come up multiple times in my career, volleyball, hockey, softball. Those are all things that I didn't really have this strong foundation with growing up. So it was all these things I told myself, this is going to apply, this is going to work. But it was overall, it did take some time to accept that this is something that is leading me to that place that I want to go, as opposed to the one narrow lane that's been chosen.
Did it help your on-air presence to be a news reporter and a news personality when you transfer that over to a play-by-play side, where you think of it as being more conversational and off the cuff, but at the same time, it is truly a persona and there is a performance aspect to it while still sounding conversational? Was there a rub off there?
I think that's a perfect description of it, honestly. And that's something that I am so thankful of too. It wasn't just reeling off 30, 40 second reports from something that I've just kind of ripped together and on a deadline put together and submitted to get on the air for our, you know, top of the hour newscast. You do become this kind of personality when you were heard on the air so often. I was daily brought on to our shows. And I'm talking about WCCO Radio. That was my most recent place, but I was also at a station in Buffalo as well, where I was living previously. So it was something where that's how you get more airtime. And that's how you expand what you're able to do, as opposed to someone who's able to just put a short script together, add in a sound bite and kind of get the job done. Really finding those places wherever you are to expand yourself. And it really was the reps, I think, outside of play-by-play, because you have to bring that kind of personality. You can't just be, whether it's radio or TV, you can never be that robotic person who's just listing off what's going on. We all know this. But I think being able to set yourself apart by having that personality, seeing different things, and then finding those moments and those places, the people that will allow you to expand on that. You know, I was able to even do quite a bit of fill-in hosting on CCO Radio as well. So that's even more finding that ability to be conversational, move a topic forward and work with other people.
For people that are maybe listening to this thinking like, all right, I do this and I really want to do my play-by-play and all of those types of things. You always have to find that right mentor or person or boss who's going to see that in you and say like, yeah, okay, well, I need you to do this because this is what I pay you to do. But also I'm encouraging and fostering your ultimate goal and dream. What were those early conversations like, I guess, particularly in Buffalo first, where you're going to your boss and saying like, hey, listen, I know you need me to do this, but how can we make this work so that I can line up my paid time off and not and still fulfill my duties to the job and get them to look at you and see you as like, hey, I'm all in, but I really need you to help me get to where I eventually want to be.
Yeah, that's a really great question. And it's something that unfortunately you might not be completely in control of. It might just kind of depend on what that superior above you is kind of thinking and what they expect from you. I think probably the number one thing I can say is to, before anything else, throw yourself completely into that job you're doing. Create that great impression of solid work that you can fall back on. Kind of like if you were a student, if you work so hard the whole semester, there was kind of like less pressure on the final, for example. You're not just like cramming and trying to get it all in at once to get that grade up. Think about this body of work that you can show to this person that you can show that there is this trust and then there's this care, that this is not a secondary thing for me. No one's going to like to hear that, right? And this is me talking specifically because a lot of my opportunities were in-house, so to speak. So if you have something, a job that's away from broadcasting, that's not something, you know, I'm super familiar with, but my opportunities have come from bosses in-house, like that tiny radio station in between Buffalo and Rochester, New York, a small little farm town. It is about letting people know what you want and saying, this is what I like to do. This is a future that I see for myself. And the thing is, I don't think I was really met with much resistance. Maybe that was people being able to see how passionate, how excited I was, and then also having that body of work to say, hey, I care a lot about this job. But as I continue to go on through my career, people started to see that this was more than just something I did on the side. For example, I'm so thankful for my superior, my program director at WCCO Radio. When I was first the radio broadcaster for the Minnesota Lynx before that was stopped right around the pandemic. But in 2019, he basically allowed me to take chunks of time off of work because of how important this was. And of course, we had a relationship with the Timberwolves / Lynx. We were their radio home at the time, but it was things like that where those superiors can step in and really give you that boost. And unfortunately, it might just depend on what that relationship is. But I think if you show, I respect you and your work first, can you help me out a little bit? That might be a good way to kind of breach it and work your way into those additional opportunities.
Yeah, no, it's good advice of, you know, be reliable, kind of hit it out of the park, be somebody that's trustworthy, and then hopefully you put yourself in the right position that ultimately it goes where you want it to. You talked about the desk with the free yearbooks, and you've mentioned a couple of times being starting in a small market in between Buffalo and Rochester, and obviously you live in Minnesota now. So I'm sure you have made many interesting travel trips at very interesting times of the year when you're climbing the ranks in those types of geographic locations. Do you have any good, do you have any good, like, I'm never going to make it home from this high school game alive moments because there are 10 feet of snow on the ground?
Oh gosh. And of course I have lived in the two most challenging winter places of all time. And I will not accept any challenges or arguments to that, living in both Buffalo and Minnesota. So yes, I've seen it all for sure. Maybe even now it's a little bit trickier because I truly am trying to jam pack my schedule and I am just at airports and running around at all times. But when I think early on, I think there was one time when I first moved to this small town, Batavia, New York. I had always been in larger cities. I was born and raised in Los Angeles. I went to college in Rochester, New York. So I was always around at least like large enough cities. That's what I was familiar to. And I remember one of my first games in Batavia, and I'm holding all my equipment in both of my hands, a backpack on my back, my hood completely cinched around my face because you know you're just being pelted with snow, whatever direction you look into. I just like imagine myself in this dark parking lot and I looked up and down each street. And this was still not when Google Maps is what it was right now. We were still using like Garmin GPSs, like slightly unreliable. How did we survive? How did we get around?
What did you do when you forgot it and you didn't put it in the glove compartment?
Oh, exactly. Exactly. So I remember just looking up and down, just completely abandoned pitch black roads in near blizzard conditions. And I was like, I have no idea which direction to get home. And if I pick the wrong direction, how do you turn around? I was just like completely frozen for minutes trying to understand how I was going to get back. And I was intimidated by it. I was not used to roads that were completely pitch dark. And that's one of those things where it's just like, it makes you a little bit tougher. And long story short, I did get home, but not without being kind of scared for myself.
Give me the recruiting story there, by the way, because how does a Los Angeles girl get recruited to play college basketball in Rochester, New York?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, so this is Division III, and I was just kind of, I mean, we're all kind of contrarian kids in some way, right? Where I was like, I'm leaving all of this LA stuff behind. I was born and raised in the Valley, went to high school in Pasadena. My swim team swam at the Rose Bowl. That's where we would do our workouts and run. And I just wanted to see a different part of the country. My dad's originally from central New York, and it was just kind of like normal from my high school to go to far off places. So it was pretty normal, and I was able to make contact with the coaching staff, and it just kind of all worked together, to be honest. And, you know, then this is another fast forward moment. You kind of got my first job before I was out of college, met my future spouse. So those things just kind of lined up. And then there I was in Western New York for multiple years.
It gets a bad rap. I used to live there too. People just make fun of it because of the snow, but it's not a bad place to wind up.
No, it's not.
Tell me about your broadcasting in college, because I heard the story on another podcast you had done where you would play your game and then like change out of your uniform and go do the men's game. And there's something about that that's hilariously awesome in so many different ways. Walk me through that experience. And did you ever have a game where like the post-game locker room speech just went a really long time and you're like, coach, I gotta be somewhere.
Oh gosh, that is a funny moment. You know what? I still remember though, when I went up to a professor who kind of oversaw our degree program and told her as a freshman that I want to do play-by-play. And she looked kind of shocked for a minute. So it was like, I had this idea in my head and I wasn't letting go of it. And the only people I had really to look to at the time were Pam Ward and Beth Mowins. And I looked up to them so much, including other sideline reporters too, of course, Andrea Kramer and Michelle Tafoya, so many more who were just authoritative women who I looked up to. But in that role, it just was not a normal thing to just plant yourself and say, this is what I'm doing. I still remember the shocked look on her face. Like she didn't have a response at the time. So it started there. And, you know, I really liked that I went to a small Division III school where every opportunity was available for every single game, every sport that I wanted to do. And it was a simple little webcast, not like what these kids on Big Ten Plus have now, which is such a golden opportunity. I just can't even believe they get to get reps with like these fantastic athletes and really great production as well. It was not the case for me back in my D3 time, but it was exactly that, where I would play in our game in Division III. It's double headers, men and women, both home and away. And then I would change my clothes. And that was literally it. So my face still beat red. Like I have not cooled down at all. Slipped the headset on, and then I was ready to go to do color or play-by-play for the men's game after that. So that's when I really learned how to study for things. I don't know if this is something you find, where we're all kind of like nerdy in some way. I always loved school. I thought about continuing my education as well, just because I enjoyed it. I have always enjoyed studying and tests and doing well in school. And that is very much an exact parallel to what I do now in terms of that studying and preparation. So that's really where that work and that groundwork is laid for how you go about, you know, getting yourself ready for these games. So it was kind of like, in addition to my homework, I'm now studying the men's team at, you know, a really, you know, significant level and level of depth. And then it was just finding other opportunities on the side, whether it's kind of your local station, your local access, and just finding those people who will say yes. I was a student, I was eager, I was in school, but it was mostly really those webcasts. Football too, I mean, stepping in to be able to do football, you know, that was something that was really, really important to my development as well.
You just have to make sure you know the scout for the women's game better than the scout for the men's game and not conflict the two.
Like, yeah, no
all right,
problem.
I was 14 either. In the women's game that only goes right. My bad, coach. you mentioned meeting your spouse in college as well. Mm-hmm. And your spouse is a broadcaster.
Yes.
So I wanted to ask you about that, because I think it's a really cool and interesting dynamic of having similar passions in what is a very competitive field, in which a lot of people are often very driven and a lot of times often very goal-oriented and career-oriented. And it's like, hey, this is where I want to go in my career, and this is where I want to go in my career. And I thought it was cool hearing a little bit of your story, because you wound up in Minnesota because your husband got a job, and you went, and it's like, all right, now I'm here, and I'm leaving behind everything I had built, and I'm gonna figure it out here. And it worked. So I'm curious kind of your perspective on driving those two parallel trains and how you've both been able to be as successful as you have over the last several years.
Yeah, that's, I'm glad you asked about that because it is, you know, an interesting dynamic, and especially for people who might be, you know, starting out and laying out their lives and seeing what that's going to look like. You know, I just want to say with honesty that it's not always easy. We were making very little money. There was a time where we were both full-time in media at different radio stations, and we qualified and lived for a couple years in HUD housing, basically rent controlled housing, where your income can't exceed a certain level and you basically get a fantastic rental rate. And that's what allowed us to live for quite some time. I was basically paycheck to paycheck till I moved to Minnesota, honestly. And that was something that took a lot of discipline and dedication to seeing this out on both sides. And it's completely understandable. I have a lot of friends who, you know, kind of found their way outside of the business, you know, because there are conflicts with family. There are conflicts with, you know, salary, things like that. It can be hard, especially, and it's completely understandable putting that time in. So I think having someone who completely understands my goals, what the schedule is, you know, someone who has seen literally from age 18, me go throughout this entire journey and path and how important it is to me has been, you know, something that's extremely beneficial. Someone who understands those interruptions. You know, last week I was gone for an entire week. You know, later on here in February, I'm going to be gone for 9 straight days. And that's a difficult adjustment if that's maybe something that, you know, you have a different kind of timeline than I did too. But, you know, it has been very interesting to kind of work side by side. We share that same extremely strong work ethic where we don't have a lot of like lives outside of work. Like it's work in each other. And I have no problem. If you want a better work-life balance, my hat's off to you. I've never really been able to work, make that work physically, mentally. Like our priorities really are work and, you know, each other, of course. So it has been just kind of a really easy thing for us to settle into. But Minnesota, you're right. That was difficult for me too. I left behind jobs I really liked, including the university at Buffalo women's basketball job. I were just coming off going to the NCAA tournament. I felt so comfortable there getting reps. And I think this is an important thing too, being part of a team and what that means and your representation and how you relate information about this team to the fans. You are that liaison and how important that role is in developing relationships and having hard talks, all these things that are really important to your development too. Just leaving them behind, coming here with nothing, no income or anything else. And, you know, just having things line up, it worked out really well. But I think it is, you know, an important thing to talk about as people look at their, you know, more long-term kind of life goals too, and how that lines up with work as well.
What'd you do going to a new city and saying like, and I know cause it was quick. So I heard in another interview, you didn't have any reels that you would put together. But you had the skill set of like, all right, I've called games. I've worked as a reporter. I've done a lot of things. How did you approach not only going to a new place, but going to a fairly major market and saying, I'm going to get somebody to believe in me come hell or high water?
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. I still remember there was anxiety about having only one income at the time. I remember taking my dog's bowl and I didn't even want to dump out the water and I just wanted to like put more on top because we were now paying a water bill, which we hadn't before. Like just things like that I was not used to, even though we had always kind of lived on a tight budget and been very conservative with our finances. It was still a little bit difficult for me. But it was also helpful again to have someone who is in the media. So my husband was starting to make connections with people at other TV stations, radio stations, newspapers, say my wife is looking for a job. This is what she can do. And it was those connections that led me to WCCO radio. So that was something that benefited me greatly. And to be honest, might have been pretty tough to do on my own because we know how difficult it is when you're just sending cold emails to, you know, boss@radiostation.com and hoping he or she actually sees it. That's a tough thing, no matter what job it is. So to have someone have that connection, say, here's this person's number, and it just timed out perfectly to be able to find a role and some security and, you know, to find other opportunities there. I was still able to report on sports, but you're exactly right. It was certainly connections, and I know all of us are also tired of that word networking as well. But in this way, through my personal relationship, through my marriage, I was able to make some of those and find an opportunity that opened up. And sometimes that's what it takes.
On networking, I want to pull a quote from you.
Said, "Oh, you really did your research here."
You said, "If I was good enough, wouldn't they be coming for me?" In terms of finding the next level, and you were like, "No, they're not. I have to reach out to them. I have to put myself out there. It doesn't just happen if I operate in a vacuum." So that being said, do you remember the first time you reached out to Big Ten Network and said, like, "Hi, my name is Sloan Martin. This is what I'm doing, and I really would like to work for you."
Yes, no, I very much remember that. And I think that's actually an important thing to bring up, because you might think, hey, I got all this work, I'm sending it out, but that doesn't mean that it's connecting. And one of the biggest lessons as an adult I have learned is that if people don't respond quickly, or if it takes some time, or you have to follow up, people are actually busy. It's not because they don't like you or they don't care. Honestly, put that into your heads. It's because they're busy. And that's a really important lesson too. But I do remember this would have been, I want to say, probably 2018, and making that connection over the summer, because college people work in college sports. That's really the time that they were available. And that's the other thing too. If you are reaching out to people and you're not hearing back, you don't understand, again, I'll repeat, it's because they're busy and you're contacting them at the peak of basketball season or football season, and they just have a lot going on. So you're going to have to think a little bit farther ahead, find those times. Yes, people take vacations during the summer. It's the best time to make it work, depending on what kind of field and specialty you're looking at. So we just had a phone conversation, just kind of get to know you. Here's what I've got. I was able to do some really high level high school broadcasts here in Minnesota. I was the first woman to do the boys hockey tournament here, and just the production value was outstanding. I was able to do football and basketball and put together what I thought was a really solid reel, but it was mostly high school, to be honest, and radio as well. So it was a little disjointed. It's not like the perfect thing to put in front of them. I really had only done a smaller amount of TV compared to my radio experience. So we just had a conversation. Then I heard nothing. That was it. I didn't hear anything. And you're thinking, well, do I follow up? But you never know what things are in the works, when your name might come up. And that's the goal in all of this. And people think networking is sending, you know, the occasional email. And I guess that's part of it too. It's a hard thing to completely say you're an expert at, but it's finding a way so that your name can be brought up in whatever room things are being discussed. And then I remember I was working 4 a.m. to noon, did a lot of 4 a.m. to noon in my career, Christmas Eve. And I got an email saying, "We have an opening. We need you in 2 days to do a Gopher game." And I still remember just the elation that I felt to finally get that okay. And I started with just 3 games that year, that first year. This would have been 2018-19. And that was a really big thing. It's just like, that's how it fell into place. And then I had my opportunity. And I remember before going on the air, I just said to myself, be yourself, to kind of take those nerves away. And that's just kind of how the ball started to get rolling. It started with that kind of initial contact, but then you just feel like, am I completely forgotten about? Am I, you know, in the back of the filing cabinet? And that you don't know. And there's a lot of mechanisms and conversations you're not privy to and don't have control of. And sometimes it's just going to be the right time, right place.
Let's use the 2 day example as a great jumping off point, because I want to talk a little nerdy on a broadcasting stance. Mm-hmm. Let's say you get an email that says, "We need you to do a Gopher game in 2 days." What is the one thing, or maybe two things, that you need to feel successful going into a broadcast? And that can be like, I need to have this conversation, or I need, like, I make a list of important storylines, 1, 2, 3, 4. And if I have that in front of me, I feel confident. What are a couple of things that you have to line up before the red light goes on for you to feel at your best?
Yeah, I have definitely had those short turnarounds too. I would say the number one thing I do, if I think I am working on a short timeline, and I also don't come in with that kind of institutional knowledge, the first thing I do, and you know, I wonder if this is also just my news and journalistic background that will always kind of be a part of me. But the first thing I do, I'm looking for recent press conferences. Where is this team at right now? What are the conversations? What are the concerns? What is their current trajectory at the moment? And then I'm also looking up local media. because they're going to have that kind of larger view, but also that detailed view of what's happening with this team, more than what you're going to see in the notes. And SIDs do a fantastic job and they're great at their job, but I am looking to local media first and foremost, if I'm not getting it firsthand from those press conferences. But those sometimes are just not always available, especially in women's sports or different kind of sports that I'm doing, softball, volleyball, for example. But I want to go straight to the source. And of course, that's going to be conversations with coaches and players as well. But I don't want to save those just for game day. I want to have a little bit more time to process, to plan, to get this full picture of context about these teams, about this season. So that's where I'm diving into. Like I said, that local media lens that's going to have everything covered. And then that first person source, which is they themselves kind of leading up into things. That's something that's just going to make me feel so much more confident before I dive in. To me, it's not going to be memorizing things. It is more of a big picture. And then let's chip away and learn what we can about these players. And that's kind of where it starts.
How do you approach, obviously you're doing a ton of Big Ten games. All right, this is the seventh time I've seen Caitlin Clark this season. This might be the 30th time somebody else has seen Caitlin Clark this season. There might be someone who has no idea who Caitlin Clark is and turned on the wrong channel, but now they're hooked. How do you approach telling that story and introducing that character? Because you're telling one narrative, but maybe it's a completely different perceived narrative to any one of the people that are watching. And you want to be able to talk to each of those people. What's your approach for how you kind of unpack who and what everybody is in front of you?
That is a fantastic question. And I think especially for someone who, you know, almost primarily does women's sports, that's sometimes how I feel. I like to treat viewers like, first of all, they certainly don't have the same level of knowledge as I do, or my partner does, because especially for Big Ten, it is this institutional knowledge where, not that I don't prepare for games, but it is so already stacked up here, you know, that I don't have to do that really from scratch work like we were just talking about. So I do like to treat viewers like they are being introduced to these players for the first time. There might be some tidbits here and there you might hear on two different Michigan State broadcasts, for example, because you might not be tuned in to both of them. If that is something that's really important to, you know, a player and their story. So you're right that it is picking and choosing those moments of what needs to be reiterated, even if it's something that I feel like is completely obvious to me. But it is a lot of, I would say, really leaning on having that less knowledge, I would say. But you're right that it is this balance. And Caitlin Clark might not be the best example because she is just ubiquitous at this point. And I think this is also where I lean on being a journalist as well, that you always have to keep things fresh. You always have to look for something new, dig for something new. Even if you're asking a coach the same question three times in a season, you might get different answers each and every time. Things change, they evolve, they might be in a different headspace, any of these things, to just keep things as frequently refreshed as possible is a really big priority of mine too. So whether you are new or you're tuning in multiple times, I feel like you can still get that same amount of information and enjoyment, but it is finding that good balance with always looking for new material.
Actually, on the Caitlin Clark note, I am curious too, because of it's somebody that is of such stature. Let's go to the journalistic thing you just mentioned. Is that like part of the fun of doing her games, is like showing up and saying, let me see if I can learn something new about her today?
That is exactly what it is. You know, there are feature stories everywhere. And especially this season, we have seen people dropping in who normally cover football or other college sports who are now, you know, trying to put their print on this story, basically. So it has been interesting to try and weave your way through and use those connections that you have, being someone who's recognizable to this team, who knows the team very well, the staff around the team as well. But when it comes to that journalistic part of it too, there is always this curiosity. And I think that is something that's essential to doing this job. Whether you are you know, an analytical or statistically inclined person, or whether you're someone like me who I love kind of the feature angle of it as well, and telling those different kinds of stories and how that all kind of molds together. It is interesting, you know, I even have here on my desk an old Iowa board here, and I have a paragraph this big about her, because you have to be prepared literally for history happening. And this was even long before she was, you know, within reach of the all-time NCAA scoring record. But because anytime she's on the floor, you have to be prepared and be ready for every single possibility that could be adding to her prolific career. So you're right that it comes with working those connections and those relationships that you have, whether it is the coaching staff, other members of the staff as well, her herself, having that in-person face-to-face access is not something that a lot of people are getting on a frequent basis that we get to, and being able to try and mine for things, where she's at right now, just her recent thoughts about basketball or otherwise, and really taking advantage of those moments. And whether it is Caitlin Clark or anyone else, that in-person access is gold. Never turn it down. Never not go to a shoot around or anything else, pass and serve, whatever it is, because that is where the basis of our storytelling begins. So definitely it is something that, again, crosses paths right there. But that's where it does get more creative at this point. I can't even think if there is a next year, you know, kind of what that's going to be like too.
Well, I guess there, in one of your jobs, there will be a next year. So that'll be, you'll cross paths again with her. Hopefully
it's, oh, that's true. Yeah.
how do you game plan that out as like a production crew of, and I hate to like stay on Caitlin Clark, but, all right. I've got game number 8 we've had of her this year. You sit down, color, producer, director, and are like, hey, here's what we're going to, and obviously the game can change and that dictates the story a little bit, but it's like, all right, here's the angle we want to do. Do you do that? We're like, this is the angle we want to take today. We want to try to tell her story this way. We're going to try it. We want to highlight this. Do you kind of try to plot out maybe how you introduce her on a game to game basis to a different audience?
Yeah, this is again, trying to make things as fresh as possible. It's not just here's Caitlin Clark, she scores a lot of points. It's here's Caitlin Clark, let's try and find something that makes sense leading up to the context of this moment. So I've even had broadcasts both last season, and I'm even thinking about this season as well, where we've even pointed out moments where she was showing a little bit of frustration, because that's been a storyline of this season. She doesn't have Monica Sinano anymore. She really had to develop these new connections with new teammates who were seeing new time, new roles. And there were some times where that leaked out a little bit, or there were turnovers where we wouldn't normally see them last year. That was a really kind of interesting early season story, is even she continued to pile up career highs in multiple categories, including, of course, her scoring, her efficiency, you know, staying really strong, but seeing her as this floor commander as well, it was a different adjustment for her as well. That was important to tell that story. So it's not just, hey, Caitlin Clark continues to be amazing. It was, here's how she's continuing to work through something new, and let's look at it and let's analyze it. Maybe she's having 15 assists in her last game. Let's focus on her passing here. Let's focus on how her rebounding sparks these fast breaks that allow Iowa to be so efficient and have their offense work so fast. So those are just some examples, some actual examples of different directions we've gone in covering her, because it is keeping it entertaining. It is telling the entire story, and we have the opportunity to break down what is, you know, a generational player. Let's look at everything possible, you know, not just the good, sometimes the challenging, sometimes the struggling, but having that work all together to again create this picture of a player who is, you know, truly special, that we want to learn more about. And there's just a wide curiosity amongst viewers in the same way.
I'm curious about your perspective on what you do as well as a former basketball player, and how that adds to the conversation. Because, you know, that is something I will never be able to say. I was never a college basketball player. I was never a sixth grade basketball player. It ended before that. I was terrible. but like when you come to the table as someone who played at a collegiate level, and you can sit down with, you know, Christy or with Megan, or now you've got two women's basketball players sitting at the table who can talk about the game. What in your eyes is the benefit of that? And then what is also, in your perspective, maybe the pitfall of like, hey, I still have to remember I'm the play-by-play person. So not to stray too much into their lane, but maybe also use my experience to enhance their lane as best as I can.
And that's, I would say, exactly what I do. Sometimes even when my color person has, you know, wrapped up their thought, I might want to add a little bit else because I'm excited about this and I loved seeing what we just saw. And I think that's just a way to keep it conversational, even if they've already, you know, the opposite team is already, you know, on their side of the floor. There's 15 seconds on the shot clock. I'll still add something in because of what we just saw on the other side. And I just don't really hesitate to do that. I don't think, to me, my goal is to always, something I always want people to get when they listen to me is enthusiasm and passion. Of course, it is fun. It is informative. I want people to learn things about both basketball and these teams, but I want also those things to come through as well. And I think what my basketball experience, particularly when we look at women's basketball, which is, you know, the bulk of my work, it already builds a rapport with my partner, with the coaches who I meet, the players who I meet, that I care deeply about this sport. This is not a stepping stone for me. This is not something to do that I'm ready to say goodbye to as soon as the opportunity comes. This will always be a part of me. And that's not to be hyperbolic. That's truly how much I care about this sport. And, you know, I played AAU against fantastic Division I players, top 100 players in our class. So I see and have seen what it's like to be a Division I player, how incredibly good you have to be the 12th person on any bench in the Big Ten, how good at basketball you are. So having that respect, I think, is immediately imparted to the people who I'm working with and the people that I'm interacting with. And that is a way that I've been able to build respect and trust with the people who I work with, which to me is more important than anything. Also, sometimes it does feel good. I remember I was working with Jim Jackson on a Big Three game over the summer, and he was like, Sloan, you know, when this happens in the post, and I was like, oh, yes, I do know. Thanks, Jim Jackson, NBA player, bringing me into this conversation as a former D3 player, but I'll take it. But it's moments like that where it does kind of help this understanding, because you know that just this love, this appreciation is always going to be there. And, you know, as you mentioned, and I touched on, it does affect the broadcasting of it too. I try not to jump too much, but I think my partner knows that I'm excited and that I want to talk about this a little bit farther as well. And I think it adds up to just kind of a fun rapport between two people who are enjoying what they're listening to.
Well, it's like people make fun of Tony Romo because there's the one instance, and they pull it up on the Dan Patrick Show all the time, where Jim said something to Tony and Tony was like, I don't know. What do you think, Jim? And it's like, what do you mean? That's your job. But there is kind of a neat aspect to it that you could say something to an analyst and the analyst can turn back to you and very seriously say, Sloan, what do you think? And that's not a dynamic that every crew gets.
Yes. And that's the thing where, because there have been times in football too, where it's staying in my lane, I will never know as much as a coach about that sport. So staying in my lane and what I know, and that's when I'm really leaning on my color analyst, but I still want to follow up about something, whether that is a question or an observation that I have, that could still be something that serves that viewer at the same time. So I think it goes back to that curiosity that even comes out in these games too. That's just going to serve whoever's listening.
Sloan, I appreciate you coming on and I appreciate you taking the time and letting us pick your brain a little bit. If people wanted to find more Sloan Martin on their TV or track you down on social media, how do they find you?
The place formerly known as Twitter is at Sloan Martin, Sloan with an E. And then Instagram is _Sloan Martin. And that's really about it. But, you know, lots coming up. We're coming up on spring as well. And I mean, definitely tune into the WNBA. It's fun to kind of have year round work and always have something going on and those seasons coming. So a lot going on.
Sloan, I appreciate it. Thanks again.
Thank you. We'll be right back.